This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Sweeb in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight, the international effort to bring the Ebola outbreak under control in the eastern DRC has been hampered again by local community resistance. And Egyptians are casting ballots for a third day on whether to permit the current president to extend his term in office. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, tensions are rising between Sudan's military and protesters who have held weeks-long sit-in around army headquarters in Khartoum. As Naba Mohadin reports, the protesters have vowed to stay until the country returns to civilian rule.
Sudan's Transitional Military Council on Monday warned protesters it plans to clear the streets around the defense ministry. Meanwhile, protesters called for an even bigger demonstration, raising the risk of confrontation. After weekend talks with protest leaders broke down, the military council issued a statement calling for barricades around the sit-in, which started April 6, to be immediately removed. The group leading the protest, the Sudanese Professionals Association, suspended talks with the military Sunday because it refused the SPA's demand to promptly hand power to a civilian council. SPA member Faisal Saleh says the protesters had already made a list of civilian leaders they wanted. But at the meeting with the Transitional Military Council Saturday, he says the situation was deadlocked, so they decided to postpone the announcement of the names and suspended talks with the military council, says Saleh. The military council, which replaced ousted former President Omar al-Bashir on April 11, is under pressure to return civilian rule after announcing a two-year transition period. Despite the removal of Bashir, protesters note the military council includes allies of the longtime president. They question the military's intentions and refuse to end their 4 months of demonstrations until the country is under civilian leadership. Protester Adam Yassin says he was actually expecting those steps from the military council, as long as it includes groups loyal to the former regime with the same ideology. Political analyst Al-Fatih Mahmoud says deadlock is expected after 30 years under Bashir. He says he expects new horizons to be unlocked in front of the young protesters. Political powers will try to form themselves and find a way to express the will of the Sudanese people. Sudan's protests began in December because of fuel and food shortages, but quickly morphed into demands for Bashir to step down. A military coup finally removed him 11 days ago. Sudan's military authorities said Bashir was moved last week to a federal prison and many of his loyalists were detained or replaced. Naba Mohadin for VOA News, Khartoum.
Forces loyal to Libya's international recognized government of national accord in Tripoli have pushed back forces from the eastern part of the country. The Libyan National Army, LNA, has advanced close to the western capital. The LNA is led by Commander Khalifa Haftar, who is allied with an administration in Benghazi in the east. However, Reuters reports that forces linked to the Tripoli government have pushed back the offensive of the LNA. Last week, Libya's Government of National Accord, GNA, criticized France for its position on Haftar's LNA. The GNA is led by Faisal al-Sarj, but the GNA accused France of secretly supporting military commander Haftar. Agence France-Presse reports that Haftar claims he now controls about 90% of the country since his forces began to approach the capital in early April. Haftar counts among his allies Egypt, the United Arab Emirates, and Russia. The interior minister of the GNA in Tripoli said France supported Haftar and announced that the GNA was cutting security ties with the European nation. The French embassy called the accusations unfounded. Haftar has gained support as an opponent of Islamic extremism. On Friday, the administration of U.S. President Donald Trump announced that the president had spoken with Haftar earlier in the week. Details of the discussion were not released. Libya's government collapsed after the ouster of longtime ruler Muammar Gaddafi in March 2011. Since then, armed groups have struggled for control and oil production has slowed to a near halt. The international effort to bring the Ebola outbreak under control in the eastern DRC has been hampered again by local community resistance, with two more attacks on medical facilities. On Friday, gunmen burst into a hospital conference room in Butembo. After accusing the people there of spreading false rumors about the disease, they fatally shot a doctor from Cameroon. Hours later, members of a militia in the conflict-racked area attacked an Ebola treatment center in the Katawa district with machetes and tried to burn it down. Police and the military shot dead one attacker and detained five others. Earlier attacks have led to aid agencies being forced to temporarily suspend operations, which is followed by an increase in new cases. Residents of the anti-government area generally don't trust officials, and some don't even believe Ebola exists. Overall, officials say more than 1,300 confirmed and suspected cases have been reported, with 855 deaths. There are concerns that the disease could jump borders into nearby countries. Cameroon was one of the 12th largest coffee producers in the world, but it is now in the 31st place as production sank from 156,000 tons in 1990 to barely 25,000 today. While exports still dominate, Cameroon is looking to domestic coffee consumption to help boost production. Moki Edwin Ketsaka reports from the annual coffee festival in Yaoundé.
Cameroon's coffee drinkers sample locally made Robusta and Arabica coffees at a testing village set up in the capital. Among the visitors is 34-year-old Cyril Yaouba. He says testing coffee today can make him to want to drink more in the future and that he thinks the coffee is very good. Cameroon Trade Minister Luc Magwambarga Atangana says the annual coffee event, Festi Coffee, aims to encourage Cameroon's 24 million people to drink more of the bean to help boost production.
Vous imaginez la taille du marché. Cela nous impose de produire davantage, de produire mieux.
He says an increase in coffee consumption will make Cameroon produce more. We can produce more, he says, if we convince this large domestic market to buy coffee and get set to satisfy them. 30 years ago, Cameroon was the world's 12th largest coffee producer. But production dropped from a historic high of 156,000 tons in 1990 to barely 25,000 tons today. Industry insiders such as Pierre-André Junior of the Torrecam Coffee Factory blame a severe drop in coffee prices for discouraging coffee farming.
Il y a plusieurs choses qui devraient évoluer. La consommation locale déjà.
He says they have to look for local solutions to their problems. Local consumption of coffee should be part of their habit, and he does not know why people have the tendency of behaving as if they are afraid of the coffee their country produces, Junior says. Junior says that Cameroon, which is still Africa's seventh largest coffee producer, is also looking outside the main export markets in Europe to regional ones.
Au niveau de la production, donc nous on va exporter à peu près 80%.
We shall be targeting neighboring markets in Nigeria, Gabon, Congo and Chad. The markets are promising and can purchase about 90% of our coffee, Junior says, adding that the Cameroon market for now is consuming just 10% of what they produce. Cameroon authorities hope to grow the market by encouraging the 300,000 government workers to drink more coffee. The theme of this year's coffee festival, Let's Act in Favor of Cameroon Coffee. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Tensions are rising between Sudan's military and protesters, as the protesters vow to continue the sit-in until the country returns to civilian rule. And forces loyal to Libya's internationally recognized government of national accord in Tripoli have pushed back forces from the eastern part of the country led by Khalifa Haftar. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Egyptians are casting ballots for a third day on whether to permit the current president to extend his term in office. The referendum would change the constitution to permit President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi to remain in office until 2030. Voters are widely expected to approve the measure. The former army general's supporters say Sisi needs another term to carry out major projects and economic reforms. Critics, however, say Sisi is seizing more power for himself and stifling individual freedoms. Observers want to find out how many Egyptians voted in the measure. They see the turnout as a test of Sisi's popularity, which has been hurt by cuts in government spending and crackdown on dissent. Today is the third and last day of voting. Results are expected within 5 days. Small-scale miners continue to lobby Zimbabwe's government to cut mining levies and fees to promote the growth of the sector and its contribution to the ailing economy and currency issues. Adigando gives us more on the story.
Through their top body, the Zimbabwe Miners Federation, ZMF, miners have been seeking cuts of 50% to 97% in regulatory levies. They say the levies are discouraging investment and output. Prospecting license requires miners to pay a total of $400. And they say only 16% of the 30,000 small-scale miners have complied and registered. Formal registration for a potential 1.5 million artisanal miners is yet to happen. The Federation is advocating for a nominal registration fee of $50. The Zimbabwe Miners Federation represents some 45,000 mining entities. The organization's spokesman, Dosman Mangisi, speaks on the mining sector, which is experiencing serious problems.
Yeah, the current state in the mining industry in Zimbabwe, I guess I have to say it's in a bad state, especially with this US dollar and RTGS component, whereby all the suppliers and manufacturers, service providers, they are after the US dollar component, and no one is keen to get. So at the end of the day, it is now suppressing miners, and the cost of business also is forced to be higher because on a day-to-day, the RTGS, the figures will be fluctuating. So that area needs to be addressed and also to come up with a win-win situation to breathe or survive.
The monetary policy, which introduced the RTGS dollar of real-time or real-time gross dollar, is widely being criticized by business leaders who see the interbank rate of the US dollar as being volatile. Miners currently receive 55% of their money from the sole official gold buyer Fidelity in US dollar currency and 45% in RTGS at the interbank rate, which is usually lower than the parallel market rate. 90% of transactions within the sector are conducted in US dollar.
Banks that have been giving forex to Zimbabwe, yes, they are closing their heads, but they're no longer because of the embargoes, the sanctions imposed to Zimbabwe. They are now, they've become a threat. So the coffers of the US dollar, they are now limited to the country.
This newly constituted Zimbabwe Artisanal and Small Scale Miners Federation represents over 50 registered and unregistered mining affiliates. It broke away from the Zimbabwe Miners Federation, citing lack of proper representation of small scale and informal miners. The organization cites access to equipment and loans as one of the barriers to growth, despite their sizable share of total gold output. The third vice president, Ms. Lindy Mpofu, speaks on the issue.
In terms of our productivity figures, we're extremely proud because in 2018, the Fidelity Refinery Reports had it on authority that we had delivered 33.2 tons. This was with both small-scale miners as well as the large scale. However, 60% of that, approximately 21.7 tons, was delivered by the small-scale miners. So currently, on average, Fidelity is receiving about 1.5 to 2 tons per month from...
A related issue is the inhibitive custom mining license, currently pegged at $5,000. Industry players say it makes no sense, pointing out that when the fee was pegged at $2,000, there were only 468 registered custom millers nationwide. The miners are lobbying the government to peg the special license at $1,000. Further, the miners decry the multiple taxes miners are being charged by the Environmental Management Agency, the Ministry of Mines and Mining Development, Raw District Councils, and other government departments. Efforts to get comment from the relevant ministry proved unsuccessful. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
At least 11 soldiers were killed yesterday in Mali by suspected Islamic extremists. Mali's defense ministry said the attack took place early in the morning at the military outpost of Guri in the central part of the country. The ministry said there was also a number of injuries as well as damage. A person linked to security told Agence France-Presse that the attackers came out of the forest with motorcycles and pickup trucks. They burnt vehicles and carried people away. The attack was the most recent raid blamed on militant insurgents in the capital, in the Central African country, on Saturday. One United Nations peacekeeper was killed and four were wounded when a landmine exploded in central Mali. The reports come as President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita named finance minister Boubou Sissi as prime minister. The entire cabinet, including the prime minister, resigned Friday over the government's failure to deal with deadly ethnic and extremist violence. In March, more than 150 villagers were massacred by an armed ethnic group. Both Mali and neighboring Burkina Faso have been hit with a violence linked to Islamist militant groups seeking to expand their influence in the Sahel, the arid region south of the Sahara Desert. Botswana responded quickly when Cyclone Idai struck neighboring Zimbabwe, gathering donated goods to help victims. But a shortage of transportation has left some of the aid stuck in Botswana. From Gaborone, Botswana, reporter Martin Ngwenya has the details.
Cyclone Idai left at least 1,000 people dead and tens of thousands homeless after sweeping through Malawi, Mozambique and Zimbabwe last month. Botswana's Red Cross Society, working with the Zimbabwe Embassy in Gaborone, launched an immediate appeal to assist the victims. The response has been encouraging, with hundreds of items, including clothes, blankets, sanitary pads and medical goods donated at aid centers in Botswana. Botswana Red Cross Society Disaster Management Coordinator Joseph Unkemetsi says the organization is pleased with the way people have responded to their call. Unkemetsi, however, says most of the donated items are now stuck at various drop-off points in Botswana, as the Red Cross has not been able to find a transporter. He says if they'd received sufficient cash donations, they would have used the money to truck the goods to Zimbabwe.
The intention was with the cash donations also it will support the logistical arrangement to transport the materials to Zimbabwe, but it has been slow in that area.
There are concerns that the donated goods and funds could be stolen in Zimbabwe, but Unkemetsi says that despite the transportation challenges, the donated items will be delivered to Cyclone Idai victims.
So we commit and we still bless that the materials will reach the destination, will reach the affected people.
Zimbabwe's acting ambassador to Botswana, Margaret Rubaranganda, says all funds that have been received will be accounted for.
We want to assure people that these donations are going to be fully acknowledged and accounted for.
Several officials in Zimbabwe have been arrested for stealing Cyclone Idai donations, although Harare authorities have promised to crack down on offenders. For VOA, this is Martin Ngwenya in Gaborone, Botswana.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Jonah Cummings, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Africa, this is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.
Voice of America.